just how I became an educated man. Question me and answer.
When, why, how, who, what, and where. The curious words that make life interesting, entertaining, and sometimes puzzling. The question words that need answers.
If you want to know, if you want to hear, if you want to see, question me.
WLTD presents, for the purpose of unboggling your mind, I Am Curious Radio, the radio program dedicated to the answering of questions and the questioning of answers, featuring Kenan Heiss, author and editor of the Action Line in the Chicago Today, and your host, Bruce Dumont.
Thank you very much, Bob Abella, and good morning, everyone. We hope that on this, our first program on WLTD, we will become a Saturday morning listening habit for you. Sitting alongside me is Kenan Heiss, who I'm sure you read daily in the Chicago Today, or Monday through Friday, I should say. And the object of our show is to share our curiosity. You're curious about something. We're curious, obviously, about a number of things. We want to share our curiosity and our knowledge with each other. And our telephone number, should you have any questions you want to call us up, is 475-1590. 475-1590. We've also received a number of mailbag inquiries thus far this week, so we'll be answering also the letters that are sent into the station. We'll tell you a little bit more about that a little bit later on. Kenan, are you all ready to get your mind, get the cobwebs out, and get ready to start thinking on a Saturday morning?
I'm curious about the question.
Okay, here's question number one from our mailbag. It's from a Helen Goodcase in Chicago. And she mentioned that recently a relative of hers visited from Los Angeles, and during her stay, as normally is the case when relatives get together, that argument came up, and they wanted to know which metropolitan area has a larger population, Chicago or Los Angeles. She said Chicago, and the relative from L.A. said L.A. Who's right?
Well, it depends on how you define metropolitan area. Los Angeles County, it has a larger area than a larger population than the Chicago metropolitan area, if you do not include with Chicago Northwest Indiana. The actual population of Los Angeles County is 7,032,000. The population for Chicago, for the whole metropolitan area, including Northwest Indiana, is 7,600,000. So there, in that point, Chicago wins. However, if you simply take the Chicago area without Northwest Indiana, the population is just slightly under 7 million. It's 6,978,000. These are the figures, by the way, from the 1970 census.
Mm-hmm.
And in digging through them, we found a few other facts, and we're going to try to do this in answering some questions, sometimes some very irrelevant material, sometimes some very interesting ones. For example, the male population versus the female population in Chicago. There's more women. There's 162,000 more women in the Chicago metropolitan area than there are men. The figure is 1,006,000 versus 1,076,000. We'll take the North Shore. Evanston happens to be the area that that we found around here that had the greatest predominance of women, for what that's worth.
That's good.
The population in Evanston, girls, this is not to your liking. It's 43,500 women or females, 36,000 men. So they may have to look elsewhere if they're looking for a date.
What about the ethnic groups, Ken? I think you mentioned to me when we were discussing this question a little bit earlier in the week about the that there are more first and second generation Russians in the Chicago metropolitan area than there are Irish and Scandinavian.
Yeah, that's unbelievable for people to realize that there are more native born Russians in the Chicago metropolitan area. There's the actual population of people who were born in Ireland for the Chicago area is 18,000. For Russians, it's 28,000. Now, the figures are very close when we're talking about the first generation. In other words, somebody's parents were born, one or more of their parents were born in this particular country. For Ireland, it's 72,000. For Russia, it's 76,000. So that there are very much more, very many more Russians, either first generation or second or native born Russians in the Chicago area. Now, of course, if you start talking about third and fourth and fifth generation, I think you're going to find a lot of Irish came here as early as the 1840s when the potato famine, and many of them, of course, the Chicago's real population growth was in the 1880s and the 1890s and around 1900. And great numbers of Irish came at that time, but their children or great-grandchildren would no longer be considered first-generation Irish. But there are actually more Russians in the Chicago area than there are Irish, when you, if you use the strict definition of the term.
One question I'd like to ask about the metropolitan area. We talked about whether we're going to include the Gary Hammond area in our metropolitan census. But how far north do we go now? Would this include Waukegan? Do we go that far north when we include the metropolitan area? Does it have that information in the census?
Well, let me
or how far north do we go? Do we stop at Lake Forest, perhaps, or would be a number of? Well, you're checking that.
I really don't know the exact boundaries. I think Lake County is all the way up to the border, definitely, up to the Wisconsin border.
So in answer to Mrs. Goodcase's question, she's right. Chicago has a bigger metropolitan area than Los Angeles.
Well, I think these distinctions are important.
We're number two. That's why they call us the second city. Or actually, we should say the second metropolitan area. Our number is 475-1590. We'll be getting to the calls in just a moment. But first, we'd like to answer another question from a Mrs. A. Holden, who writes us from Wilmette. She said that she just recently moved to the North Shore and brought an old violin that she had that's dated 1721, and the name Stradivarius is inside. And she wants to know whether there is a place in the Chicagoland area where she can find out if it is truly an original, and if so, how much does it cost, and where does she, how does she go about finding that information?
Well, there's several music stores that will evaluate violin for you. The last time I checked, I think it was cost something like $25 or $30 to have it evaluated. I really, in most cases, it's really not worth it. Most old violins that were made in Europe in the last century had either Stradivarius Faciebat and then a year in it, or some other great master. Everybody that made their violins stuck one of those labels in into the thing. It really isn't worth going down to a music store unless you have other reasons to indicate that this is valuable. That in itself is absolutely no indication. Matter of fact, that's a pretty good indication that it's not valuable.
In other words, when they're making, they just put it on for...
That's right.
To confuse people, more or less.
Well, I don't know why they put it on. It, you know, it could have been that they were trying to imitate these people and that was a style or whatever. I don't know why they did, but... They did put it on. They put it on for over 100 years, and it's meaningless.
We'll get back to the mailbag in just a moment, but first let's go to the Curiosity Line and take a call. Good morning. You're on the air.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you two questions. First of all, let me say I think your program is tremendous.
Thank you.
And I'd like to ask you, whatever happened
it's our first
to the
review.
Red Baron?
Pardon?
Whatever happened to the Red Baron?
The Red Baron, famous... German flying ace.
Yeah.
Kenan, what about the Red Baron?
We've had that in the past in Action Line, Chicago. I can remember some of the facts, but it's one I'd like to research a little better, maybe bring back next week. He was killed by a fellow by the name of A. Roy Brown, who was an English flyer. And it was in 1918. His triplane was brought, his Fokker triplane was brought down. It was a classic dogfight. Again, there's some facts I remember. Let me give you that answer. He was killed in battle by the man by the name of A. Roy Brown, although there's been at times some challenge as to whether he actually brought him down or not. But let me bring that up next week. This is one of my favorite subjects to go into, World War I aces, and go into some of the other aces, and maybe we could start off with that as a lead question. Is that all right with you?
Okay, let me ask you the other question. I've heard a lot of times that if you take the tabs off the cigarette packs, you send them in for a C&I dog.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard that?
Oh, yes. Yeah, we have checked.
Was it ever true?
No, it was never true. We have checked with all the tobacco companies, or at least many of them. You can't check with all of them. And they have tried to trace it down, and they have never found, you know, anything like that in any way. People have said, you know, collect this, collect cigarette packages.
About 12, 13 years ago, when I was in high school, I was going with a girl who used to do this, and in her high school, they were actually saving this. They had several thousand of them.
Oh, we've gotten letters in the action line of people who've had just rooms and rooms. Please, what should we do with this? You know, and they've always got somebody there to ascertain that says that, you know, Joe's second cousin knows for certain that the things are valuable and that they should be saved, and you know, where to send them, but we can't get locate the guy anymore, or he doesn't know. You know, and the more you chase it down, the more nebulous it becomes.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you for calling. Good morning. You're on the air. What's your question?
Yes. Now, I'd like to know, first of all, if all the networks are legally bound by the FCC Bureau in Washington, D.C. to carry the Watergate hearings live.
No, I would not. They are not bound. It is just they're in the competitive business of news. News is one of the most competitive things in broadcasting, and at the moment, in the early stages of the Watergate investigation, they are competitive.
Yeah.
I think another question I'd like to ask, couldn't one of the networks carry it? Why couldn't they come up with a national network for carrying this? Like, for example, you know when Jerry Lewis does his telethon, he's on Channel 32 in Chicago, and he might be on several different channels of no network affiliation at all in the country, but he hits the whole country with this telethon. Now, why couldn't they do the same thing with the Watergate?
Let me go back to one question. One of the reasons that all three networks are carrying it is that there are many cities that only have one network.
Well, I know that on VHF. Right. Like Austin, Texas, the station that LBJ owns is the only VHF station there is.
So,
I know that.
This is true. And this is...
Most people do have UHF now and could get it if it was really that important to them, I would think.
Well, how do you decide who in New York or who in Chicago with this very, you know, this particular lucrative market gives up their advertising time to this? I mean...
Well, first of all, the three major networks... probably have more advertisements on them than any of the independents do, and some of the independents aren't even on until maybe noon or 1 in the afternoon on weekdays. Channel 9, I think, is really the only independent that's on before noon in Chicago. And I would think the networks themselves would be saying, well, we are losing... they must, of course, first of all, there are no commercials during the Watergate, except for maybe the break for lunch when they resume their normal programming for like an hour and a half. But now the networks are losing a lot of money on this, and I would think... as money-conscious as they seem to be, and, you know, if they don't find a sponsor for a program, a normal program in the course of a week, if it doesn't have ratings, they can't get a sponsor, they won't keep it on because it may be a good program, but for some reason or other, they carry this live, and they're not making a cent on this.
Right, sir, I would say that I think initially the subject of the Watergate is so large at the moment and on everyone's mind, there, as I say, the competition between the networks is great. I think as the investigation continues, I think it is probably going to wear, even though it is very interesting and tends to be very exciting, at least for the, let me just finish the point. I would say that I think as they continue to go, I think the public interest in it is going to wane, especially as I heard the other day, this may go on until the fall. And as that interest slackens, I think you're going to see television coverage be limited. I think what you're going to see is probably one of the networks, probably ABC, first of all, that they will bail out of the gavel-to-gavel type coverage as they did in the convention and just bring you highlights during primetime hours.
Well, now, I understood that, now, according to one of the Chicago papers, I don't know if this was in Chicago Today or not, but I read where CBS received 1,609 phone calls against putting that on and 9 in favor of putting it on. I don't know if they...
That was the first day. Yesterday's papers gave you just the opposite picture. That I think NBC last night said that they got 3 times as many calls as they did the first day,
mm-hmm.
and the vast majority of these were in favor of them keeping Watergate hearings on. And matter of fact, all three networks reported this, and this was in yesterday's paper.
Well, do you think this will hurt, like say, for example, if someone is up for trial... as a result of these hearings. Now, where would you find an impartial jury covering this coast to coast and having so many people involved or knowing about it? Do you think you could actually find an impartial jury to hear the case of any of the people who would be up for trial?
part of you're asking us for opinions, and we're going to try to stick to factual questions where we can contribute facts or look them up or give resources. What I'm saying is that the type of questions that we're going to try to answer are not ones that, you know, we're going to give, well, especially that type of a question, which basically is a legal opinion. And we're not, you know, we're not here to give them. We're not even here to give an opinion on a legal question.
Sir,
thank you very much for your help. You have a very interesting show. This is the first week, you said?
Right. Volume 1, number 1. We hope you enjoy the show and we'll listen every week. And maybe by next week we won't have Watergate every day.
Okay,
but you have to admit one thing, sir. Hello? You've got to admit one thing.
What?
It's a little more interesting than the guiding light.
I tell you, I was sick for the last couple of days.
Oh, I see.
Home from work. And,
okay.
To me, cheering up is watching these ridiculous soap operas because they are so funny. I mean, I know a lot of people take them seriously, which is up to them. And there are many ladies who plan their whole day around these serials.
Uh-huh.
But to me, they are so funny. I just get so many good laughs. It kind of cheers me up.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Our number is 475-1590. You're listening to I Am Curious Radio, and we will be back in just a moment.
The Curiosity lines are opened at 475-1590. 475-1590. Bruce and Kennan will return right after this message.
My name is Sybil. I'm a lonely, shy woman until I become...
Vicky, a self-assured, sophisticated blonde. Until I become...
Mike, a dark-haired carpenter, until I become...
Marsha, a right-turned painter, until I become...
Rolfie, a baby, until I become...
Me.
You just heard an actress play a character that seems too wild to be anything but a fiction. The fact is the character is real. She is Sybil Dorset, a woman possessed by 16 separate personalities, each with a separate identity unknown to Sybil herself. The story of Sybil Dorset's life, one of the strangest in psychiatric history, is told in a new Chicago Today series. Her abused childhood, her tortured years of psychoanalysis, her physical changes, all unfold like a psychological detective thriller too astonishing, too unreal to be real. Read Sybil, a true story, perhaps the most unusual ever published in Chicago Today.
Appearing now in Chicago Today. Weatherwise in the area, variable cloudiness. The shower should be ending by morning, becoming mostly sunny and pleasant this afternoon, highs in the upper 60s. Right now along the lakefront, 51, O'Hare 55, and Midway officially 53 degrees. I Am Curious Radio with your hosts, Kennan Heiss and Bruce Dumont, will return right after this.
Eden's Plaza Shopping Center, where you can shop with confidence for all the family. Eden's Plaza Shopping Center, where Eden's Expressway, Skokie Boulevard, and Lake Avenue meet at Wilmette. Eden's Plaza Shopping Center, easy to reach, easy to park, easy to shop.
National Food Source invites you to Eden's Plaza for the value-packed 17th anniversary sale, now at Eden's Plaza, Wilmette. And now WLTD Radio returns to I Am Curious Radio with Kennan Heiss and Bruce Dumont.
Okay, let's get back to the Curiosity Lines. Hello, you're on the air. What's your question?
Hi, I was just wondering about, I work in Chicago and I live in Evanston, and I write the L every day, and I was just curious to know the history behind the L, like how long have the L tracks been up in Chicago?
How long has the L been up in Chicago, Kennan? You drive that, you say that you ride that every morning?
Yes.
You have that beautiful scenic view of Chicago.
Yes. It's
the backside view of Chicago.
Right.
The first L tracks in Chicago were built back in 1892. By the way, this is a fairly easy question for me to answer because I'm able to pull my book out and get a lot of questions, I think, on Chicago this way. Is there only one Chicago? Anyhow, they were built in 1892, and the first cars were pulled by a 26-foot coal-burning locomotive. The big push on the L line, the big where they really made it though, was in 1893 for the Columbian Exposition when they went south to Jackson Park. By then they had one that was, you know, really extended, and they were able to. So, and then the later 1890s, the Evanston and the Ravenswood tracks were completed. I think the Ravenswood were a little later, maybe around 1900.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I really enjoy the show.
Okay, thank you very much for calling. Good morning. You're on the air.
Yes, Scott Radio used to produce radios. I think they're no longer being produced, but at one time, they produced a radio that had a chromium caps for their tubes. It was a live tube, not a printed circuit. I wondered how valuable these things are today.
A chromium tube radio?
Oh, there are tubes, and they had chromium plates that fit over the tubes. Inside the radio.
Yeah, are you talking about how valuable the radios are, or how valuable the...
How valuable the radio is with the caps and original conditions.
Original conditions.
It's in very good condition. A friend of mine has one. We're just curious how valuable it would be if we had to dispose of it. How much we could get for it.
Well, we are now also curious. Add Kenan and I to your friend and yourself, and we'll see if there's anybody out listening to the program this morning who knows the answer to that question.
Well, thank you, sir. It's a very interesting program.
Okay, thank you very much for calling.
Success with it.
We'll be back to the Curiosity Line in a moment, and our number is 475-1590, but let's get back to the mailbag, and again, a little bit later on, we'll be telling you how you can participate, not only via the telephone, but also through the United States mails. We received a letter this week from a Marcy Debson, who listens to WLTD in Arlington Heights. She writes that she feels that Judge John Sirica and James Thompson should be nominated for some kind of an award, like the Pulitzer Prize or the Nobel Peace Prize or something. She wants to know, how does one, for instance, the Nobel Peace Prize, how does one go about nominating a person for such award, and are these nominations open to the public?
Well, the Nobel Peace Prize nominations are not open to the public. However, they are open to members of the government of any nation. I think this pretty much would be a member of the Senate or the legislature, or you could send the one about Sirica to maybe Nixon, President Nixon.
He might want to put that in.
Also, you could contact in the different areas the professors of political science, law, history, and philosophy of certain universities are eligible to nominate people. So, actually, the prize itself is awarded by the Norwegian Nobel Committee and the Swedish groups. And they have four prizes: physics, chemistry, medicine, and literature, besides the Peace Prize.
That would be. If she was being serious about nominating those people, it would have to be in the area of peace, I would think. Although I don't know how much domestic tranquility it's promoting. That's certainly debatable.
Right.
We'll get back and take some more of the mailbag questions in a moment, but we have another call on here. Let's take it. Whoops.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Yes. Hello.
Hello. Whoops. We lost one. We'll get that one back in a moment. All right, let's get back to another mailbag question from Rosalind Perper, who listens to the show in Skokie. We hope she's listening to the show today. The other evening while watching television, they saw a film featuring Bruce Gordon, who used to portray Frank Nitti on The Untouchables, and it started a discussion about the crime days of Chicago, and she wondered what happened to Frank Nitti.
Frank Nitti was the successor to Al Capone. In handling the syndicate, the mob, he killed himself in 1943. Was out in Riverside, I think it was. Well, 22nd and Street in and by the Illinois Central Spur out there. What had happened was he had been indicted by a New York grand jury on had to do with I believe some. Unions for movie productions unions, and he had been indicted for it. And it was a day later that he went out and apparently got himself very drunk beforehand and missed with the first two bullets. Like there were two bullet holes through his hat, and the third one he did shoot himself and killed himself.
Mm-hmm. Our number is 475-1590, and we will be taking a call. Hello.
Hello?
Yes, what's your question?
Is it true that even Larry Daly wouldn't run against Bob Cherry?
Pardon?
Is it true that even Larry Daly wouldn't run against Bob Cherry?
That I do not know, sir. We'll have to check that one out. Hello, you're on the air.
Oh, that call that you had a little while ago about Watergate got me kind of interested, but I'm more interested in Chicago politics. I'm frankly a little bored by Watergate, but I never tire of some of Chicago's famous bandits. And one of the guys, or actually two of the guys that that interest me an awful lot are Charlie Weber and Patty Baller. Now, I know Charlie Weber is dead, because I happened to serve his funeral mass about 15 years ago. But whatever happened to Patty Baller? Did he die, or what, you know, what, where can you, is there any source for, of information on those guys, that whole, old clique of guys? Baller is most famous for mentioning that, or for commenting that Chicago just ain't ready for reform yet. Is there any literature on those guys? It's a fascinating subject, and I've just never really been able to read much about it.
Kenan?
Well, there's no book on Patty Baller yet. Several people supposedly have said that they're going to write one, and some people, I think, are even working with them. But Patty Baller, I guess, ain't ready for publication. And he ain't ready for the grave yet. He's been around for quite a few years. He was alderman of that famous 43rd Ward for 30 years. But he lives down in Florida most of the time. He gets back here to Chicago once in a while. Patty's, one of his other famous thing is that he's a world traveler, and he'd pick up and go anywhere, anytime, any place. And his Chicago-style politics followed the hinky-dink Kennas and bathhouse John Coughlins and Charlie Weber's. And typical of his...
Tom Keen.
Well,
you said that, we didn't.
You said it. He does. Tom Keen doesn't quite have the colorful, open flair to the fact that, you know, I cheat. I'm corrupted little things that that these guys did. They you know, they were all pretty open and honest individuals.
Open and honest crooks.
Right.
Well, that's your interpretation. We'll have to wait and see what the what the judge says, or the jury.
They never got caught.
Or whoever.
Never got convicted.
Convicted, that's right.
How many Chicago Democrats get convicted in the Chicago courts?
Well, we'll have to wait and see. There's been a couple that have been convicted. We'll have to wait and see.
Okay?
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for calling. Our number is 475-1590. We're going to break for 5 minutes of news. Baba Bella has the latest to you from WLTD Radio in Evanston, and we will be back after that news.
WLTD Evanston, it's 12 noon, and good afternoon. I'm Bob Abella with the news on the hour. The Democratic Party's National Director of Women's Activities said in Chicago today that Illinois women have a long way to go to get full equality with men in the state Democratic Party. Illinois Senator Charles Percy is keynoting the Wisconsin State GOP convention today with a series of proposals for campaign fund reforms. One would limit campaign contributions and spending. Alexander County authorities are trying to identify the body of a woman found near Cairo in the Mississippi River last night. Officials say that they don't know if foul play was involved. The Washington Star-News says former White House aide John Caulfield claims he did not use President Nixon's name when offering Watergate conspirator James McCord help if he kept his mouth shut. McCord testified yesterday that Caulfield told him Nixon was aware of the meeting between the two men. Caulfield will take the stand Tuesday to testify before the Senate Investigating Committee. An attempt is being made to repressurize the orbiting Skylab space station with fresh oxygen to make it safe when the three astronauts attempt to link up later on next week. Flight controllers say toxic gases may have been generated by the 110-degree-plus temperatures in the Skylab cabin earlier this week. It's believed that the heat may have caused insulation and possibly other materials to give off gases. A revised figure from the Walpole, Massachusetts State Prison reveals 6 inmates were wounded before an outbreak that begun last evening was crushed. A 7th inmate was stabbed with a pitchfork by another prisoner prior to that ruckus. The wounds to the 6 were described as superficial, consisting of pellets from shotguns fired by troopers and guards. The troopers were called to protect firemen who extinguished 2 blazes that were set by the prisoners. A Venezuelan airliner hijacked yesterday by 4 armed leftist guerrillas has arrived in Mexico City and may continue on to Cuba. The skyjackers have threatened to blow up the plane with its 37 occupants unless 79 Venezuelan political prisoners are released. Venezuelan government officials say the demand will not be met. Henry Kissinger and Hanoi's Lee Dak Tho have begun their 3rd rounds of talks about Vietnam ceasefire violations. Those 2 meetings are at the home of an American businessman in suburban Paris. The Atlanta Braves have obtained veteran first baseman Joe Pepitone from the Chicago Cubs for cash and minor league first baseman Andy Thornton. Time trials at the Indianapolis Speedway have been delayed at least an hour because of morning rain. Those are the headlines, WLTD News Time, 12:03.
Spring in Chicago certainly makes up for the long, rough winter. The birds are back, the flowers, more and more fresh fruits and vegetables, the bike rides, golfing, and some nostalgic traditions, like weddings and Mother's Day. Well, this year, instead of giving Mom or Grandma a lot of little nothings, chip in and give her a big something. Get the family together and present her with an automatic dishwasher, for example, or a microwave oven, or a new range. At Polk Brothers, there are literally hundreds of brand-name time- and work-saving big somethings at famous little Polk Brothers prices. Trade-in allowances, too. Free factory service, very important. Warranty, delivery. Bridal showers make a wonderful time to join forces and present the new bride-to-be with years of beautiful memories. And she'll be proud of the name you choose. General Electric, Hot Point, Zenith, RCA, Frigidaire, Amana. Great names you'll find at Polk Brothers. All Polk Brothers stores, including our new Glen Ellen store, nightly till 10, Sundays till 6.
Cloudy skies becoming partly sunny later on this afternoon. Cooler, the highs ranging from the mid-50s to the upper 60s, depending on where you're located. From the lake. This evening, fair and cooler with the lows in the mid or the upper 40s. And Sunday, mostly sunny skies, high Sunday in the upper 60s, possibly a little cooler than that near the lake. Northwesterly winds are 10 to 18 miles an hour this afternoon, becoming north to northwest, 6 to 12 this evening. The probability of rain is 10% through the day. It'll be diminishing to about 5% both this evening and then again on Sunday. Along the lakefront, 51 degrees, O'Hare 55, and Midway officially 53, the humidity 66%, and at present winds are out of the northeast by 12 miles an hour. This has been WLTD News and Weather, and now back to I Am Curious Radio with your hosts, Kenan Heiss and Bruce Dumont.
Thank you very much, Bob. We have an answer, by the way, or hopefully we have some information on the gentleman that called about the chromium plate tube. I understand that you might be able to find the information at Pequod's Pizza Restaurant and Old Radio Museum. It's located in Morton Grove, and their address is 8520 Fernald, F-E-R-N-A-L-D, and they may have the information there. So for that gentleman, one of our curiosity experts walked into the studio and gave us that information. That, of course, is that great man of curiosity and knowledge, that distinguished broadcast veteran, Chuck Shaden. And by the way, a reminder that this afternoon from 1 to 5, Chuck on his Those Were the Days program today, we've got what a lineup. He's got the War of the Worlds broadcast, one of the most infamous broadcasts in the history of broadcasting. That'll be rebroadcast this afternoon between 1 and 5. And also the 15th anniversary show of Fibber McGee and Molly. Let's get back to the calls on the Curiosity line. Our number is 475-1590. 475-1590. Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Yes. My husband and I filed a joint tax return in January of this year. And we're due to get a refund, and we haven't heard anything yet. Many people that filed after we did received their money already. I would like to know what could be the reason for the delay of 4.5 months.
Have you had any contact with the Department of Revenue about it at all? Have you called them to find out whether the check may have been sent and maybe lost in the mail?
I called the Chicago office, and they send me a form to fill out. And I send the form on to Kansas City. Then a few weeks later, I called the Chicago office again, and they said they can't do anything more about it. It has to come from Kansas City.
Oh, this is the federal tax you're having trouble with.
Right, the state one I got in 4 weeks.
You got that, okay.
It's the federal one. It's 4.5 months already.
Now, there's no reason that it should be that long. What you can do if you want to, you can write us a letter at the Action Line in Chicago today. And we've been very successful in unclogging some of the, or cutting some of the red tape and unclogging some of the stuffed up channels with the Internal Revenue.
Uh-huh.
So if you want to write us a letter, send it to the Action Line at 441 North Michigan Avenue. We'll take a shot at it.
441 Michigan Avenue.
Yeah, 60611.
60611.
Okay.
Okay, fine. I hope that brings some action because I don't know what else to do. I'm not going to call Kansas City.
Right.
And I was thinking about writing a letter to the Internal Revenue, but I don't know how much I'd get from that either.
Well, let's see what we can do on it.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you very much for calling.
Right.
Our number is 475-1590, and you're on the air.
Okay, sir. I have a slight answer. On the subject of the steam locomotives that pull the elevated train, about 30 years ago I read an article where one of those was found in the desert, I believe in Texas or New Mexico, and they've never been able to figure out how it ever got out there. Whether it's still in existence or not is something else. Did you ever run across that item?
No, I didn't. The dummy locomotives that were used on the lines stayed on there for a very short time because the Insull built here in Chicago big enough generators so that they were able to electrify the tracks and have electric trains. So they didn't last very long on the lines. And of course, all these steam locomotives are dummy locomotives. They were called dummy, by the way, because they had a plate on each side.
Yes.
To protect it from the engine, the boiler, from people touching it or animals getting at it or whatever. They were later used elsewhere around the world. I do know they sold them, and I've read something about this one going there or the other place, but I don't know about that one.
Oh, it got out
story.
There. Could I ask you a question? One question on. I know there are 3 submarines in the Chicago area. Do you know of any others? Are there any at Great Lakes or?
Well, there's one out in the middle of Lake Michigan.
Yeah, by Waukegan.
No, yeah, off the shore, underneath.
Mm-hmm. And we have the one down by Randolph Street and the one in Jackson Park. I was wondering if Great Lakes, if they use any up there, or keep having for trading up there.
Not that I know of, but perhaps somebody from Great Lakes can give us an answer on that.
All right, then thanks.
But you do know that there is one sunk out in the lake from the First World War that
that was a UC-96. It's a mine layer, but it's really down too deep for anybody to get to it.
Yeah, everybody's always trying. They've had 3 or 4 expeditions of people that were going to go down and salvage.
I think Mason up there in the fish place. He's pretty sure where it is, but he says it's down. He gives it in fathoms. I think it comes out about 250 feet, and that's a pretty deep dive.
They destroyed the thing or put it down there as a result of the Treaty of Versailles at the end of the First World War, in which they had to, destroy the weapons of war, and this was one of them. They took it around and showed it to a few people first, but then they sunk it.
I think the Wilmette was used to send that down, which was a converted Eastland.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's the story behind that. I guess that was scrapped after the war ended too, wasn't it?
The Wilmette?
Yes.
The Wilmette had quite a history. Just a second, I've got something here on it.
While you're looking that up, Ken, let me remind everyone that our number is 475-1590, and that also goes for anyone out who may be listening to the show out in Great Lakes who may have some information as to whether there is indeed a submarine in that area. You sound like a real submarine buff.
Yes, I'm somewhat interested. Now, on the Wilmette, I used to see that tied up down there alongside of Navy Pier, and it had some odd-shaped plates on the side, and I was told that that's where they cut into it when it rolled over in the Chicago River to get people out. They cut into it with a torch, and you could see peculiar welding marks along the sides of it. It used to be tied up right there at just south of Navy Pier. I believe there's a restaurant there now or something, but... They didn't seem to have a point in the odd cutting marks on the side of the ship.
If I can give a plug for my book, Is There Only One Chicago? There's a great picture of the Eastland on its side in there. It was from the files of Chicago Today, taken in 1915, and you can see those holes that you're talking about that were cut into the Eastland.
Yeah, they were still evident on that ship, and I remember seeing that about 1948, I think it was still
812 people died inside that ship, by the way.
I understand that we have an answer to your question on another line, so why don't we ring off, you listen to the radio, and we'll get an answer for you, okay?
Thanks very much.
Okay, thank you very much for calling I Am Curious Radio. Good morning, you're on the air. I understand you have an answer on our submarine question.
Right, Bruce. All submarine training in the Navy is done out of New London, Connecticut.
It's my hometown.
Oh, yeah?
Sure.
All submarine school is there in Grattan.
That's right, right across the Thames River, or the Thames River. Only they call it the Thames River in Connecticut.
Well, those of us who've been there refer to the people that sail on it as river rats.
Oh, I see.
Anyway.
We call them next-door neighbors.
There's no submarine training done anywhere else except in New London, Connecticut, and that's as of about 2 years ago. Also, there are no submarines on active duty in ports other than those along the coastlines and the outside islands. Any submarines that are here would be just the ones that are for reserve training, which are decommissioned.
Were you in the submarine service?
Right.
I have a question for you. Concerning the small, I believe, German submarines that supposedly came ashore, I guess, off the coast of North Carolina during the Second World War. Are you familiar with that incident? Or a number of incidents, I guess?
Slightly familiar with it.
Do you know whether, are they at the bottom of the ocean there, or where are they? Or were they captured?
No, they were not captured.
Oh, I see.
They were sunk there on the bottom of the ocean. No, the U-505, which is in the museum, is the only submarine that was captured in the war.
Mm-hmm.
The rest, if they were taken, were sunk.
Okay. Thank you very much for following up on that caller.
Bye-bye.
Okay? Thank you.
I just read something recently on where the U-boat name came from, and it came from the Unterseen, or whatever word, I can't remember my German for what sea was. I think maybe something like that, but it means unter the sea, under the sea. That's why they got the U.
Meer.
Unter Meer. Haha. Someone has an answer always.
Someone always has an answer. And by the way, this is basically what we're looking for on I Am Curious Radio. If someone has a question, obviously Ken and I, we do not have the answers to every question that you could possibly come up with, but you would find that by sharing your curiosity with us, we'll be able to share our knowledge with each other, and there will be somebody out there in our listening audience who will have an answer to the question that you call us with. And our number is 475-1590. 475-1590. You're listening to I Am Curious Radio from WLTD Radio in Evanston. And good afternoon. You're on the air.
Hello. I would say the aspect of Chicago history that most interests me, about which I am most curious, is the Chicago Fire. And frequently when friends and I sit down and we're talking and the Chicago Fire comes up at all, we try to think of different things that have survived or people who knew people who were here at the time of the Chicago Fire or whatever. And one question which has come up that none of us really found the answer to was if there is any business in Chicago or company which was in business at the time of the fire and still is active today.
Well, there was a lot of businesses that were, most of the businesses, the older businesses, like Marshall Fields was Marshall Field and Lighters, and Carson Perry Scott's was started before then. A lot of the major businesses, you go back, started in those days. Chicago had a population at that time about 300,000. The oldest business in Chicago survived the Chicago Fire, and that was the C.D. Peacock Company. That was the jewelers that are at State and Monroe.
That's the oldest business in Chicago?
That's right. When I last checked there were three male peacocks working still at the thing. I think one was C.D. Peacock III and C.D. Peacock IV. And Elijah Peacock founded it, the company, in 1837.
Hmm.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I wouldn't think that a jewelry company would really be, one of the first in Chicago or whatever, one of the oldest. It seems like that would be a luxury type thing rather than a necessity.
Maybe they had more money to spend in those days.
Probably.
In the 1830s, people were making money so fast in Chicago. They would buy, some of them bought land at $20 an acre and sold it 2 or 3 years later at $3,000 an acre. I mean, and of course they bought many acres, or sometimes lots were selling for this this price. It was a tremendous boom. 1837, by the way, was the year that the boom really peaked. And there was a bust right after that. That same land that was selling for $3,000 a lot by 1838 was back to maybe $300-$400. But Chicago's history has been full of these tremendous land booms, and I contend it grew faster than any other city in the world in the 19th century.
Okay.
I hope there's a boom ahead. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for calling. Our number is 475-1590. I'm Bruce Dumont, along with Ken and Heiss of the Chicago Today's Action Line, and we will return in a few moments.
My name is Sybil. I'm a lonely, shy woman until I become
Vicky, a self-assured, sophisticated blonde until I become
Mike, a dark-haired carpenter until I become
Marsha, a right-turn painter until I become
Rolfie, a baby until I become
me.
You just heard an actress play a character that seems too wild to be anything but a fiction. The fact is, the character is real. She is Sybil Dorset, a woman possessed by 16 separate personalities, each with a separate identity unknown to Sybil herself. The story of Sybil Dorset's life, one of the strangest in psychiatric history, is told in a new Chicago Today series. Her abused childhood, her tortured years of psychoanalysis, her physical changes, all unfold like a psychological detective thriller too astonishing, too unreal to be real. Read Sybil, a true story. Perhaps the most unusual ever published in Chicago Today.
Appearing now in Chicago Today. Weather-wise in the Chicago area, it's going to be cloudy for the rest of the afternoon. The highs will be up in the 60s. Fair and cooler this evening with the lows in the mid or the upper 40s. Right now along the lakeshore, 51, O'Hare 55, and Midway officially is 53 degrees. I am Curious Radio with your hosts Kenan Heiss and Bruce Dumont will return in a moment. What name do more North Shore residents think of when they consider pharmacies? Well, the answer is simple. Lyman Sargent's Pharmacy. Lyman Sargent's Pharmacy is headquartered in Evanston and Wilmette, and for 50 years has helped guard the health of the North Shore. Lyman Sargent's Pharmacy has done this with their complete line of pharmaceuticals and with good old-fashioned personal attention to the needs of their customers. Lyman Sargent's Pharmacy is not only the North Shore headquarters for pharmaceuticals, but, if you wish, can deliver an order promptly to your home in their radio-dispatched cars. Lyman Sargent's Pharmacy is also your North Shore headquarters for hospital supplies and convalescent aids, wheelchairs, oxygen equipment, walkers, chains, and a complete line of hospital supplies. Lyman Sargent's Pharmacy is located in downtown Evanston on Church near Orrington and in Wilmette at 1138 Central. They're open 7 days a week with convenient hours to serve your needs. Ask about their handy charge account program while you're there. Lyman Sargent's Pharmacy, your North Shore headquarters for everything in the field of pharmaceuticals. And now I Am Curious Radio continues with Kenan Heiss and Bruce Dumont.
Thank you very much, Bob. Our number, 475-1590. Let's take another call. Hello, you're on the air.
Good afternoon. I think one of the businesses that was around during the Chicago fire was the Chicago Title and Trust, although possibly under another name.
Oh, it was under, sure, it was. As a matter of fact, fortunately, they saved many of the documents from the Chicago Title and Trust, and otherwise much of the, you know, it could have been many, many questions about the land ownership after the fire, in the whole, because the whole Loop area, and much more, north of Fullerton, burned out at that time.
Right. Well, they used to tell us a story. I worked on it quite some time ago, and they used to tell us a story where they more or less procured a couple of wagons that people were moving their belongings on and put their records on them. Somebody had the foresight
That's
to say
right.
just exactly what you said, that this was you know, going to be very valuable. And I believe they had the only pre-fire actual records of That's land transactions.
That's right. Chicago lost many records. Can I ask you a question back? Hello?
Sure, are you still go ahead, with us? I'm here.
All right. What we want to do is every week we want to throw in a question back to somebody and we give out a small prize to this thing. This is going to be a geography thing. We're doing it mainly because I've always wanted to do this kind of a thing. I've always wanted to hold some kind of a contest that that you could win. Now, it's going to be a geography question. We're going to try to ask one from some of our caller every week.
All right.
And I'm going to ask you, give you the name of a city, and I'm going to ask you to tell me what state it's in and how to spell the. Are you good on your spelling?
No, I'm not, but I'll give it a try.
All right. Maybe my pronunciation is good enough. It might help you a little bit. The city is Ashtabula.
Ashtabula?
Ashtabula.
I would say Wyoming.
Well,
wrong.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks.
We'll ask another caller. Thank you very much, sir. Okay. Our number is 475-1590, and we will be asking our next caller that question. And I'm curious about something right now. My daughter, for Christmas, received a wind-up toy. Now, usually on a wind-up toy, they somewhere on the little doll, they mention the name of the song that the wind-up toy is playing or singing or whatever they're doing. And I have one that does not have the name of the song, and it sounds familiar to me, but I've played it for a number of people, and they don't know what it is. So this is a question. Don't call up with a guest, because you're not going to get a prize for this. This is for our music experts who are listening. And I'm going to wind the toy up, and I want to play it, and I want to find out if anybody in the audience can tell me what the name of this song is. Okay, here we go. Listen to it. All right, 475-1590 is the number. Name that tune. That's for my own curiosity, and try to help us out. Okay? One other question before we get back to the telephone calls. I'd like to mention that if you have any, if you're unable to get through today and our lines are jamming up on us, that if you would like to write us a letter, please drop us a postcard or an hour letter. Try to keep the questions as short as possible. And send us, send your questions to WLTD, Evanston 60202. And in the lower left-hand corner of the card or envelope, please put the word curious. It'll help the gals around the office here to sort the mail out a little bit. WLTD, Evanston 60202, put curious in the lower left-hand corner. And we will also have, each week, as we have done this week, we will be taking a number of questions that have been written to us in addition to the calls that we'll be taking on the air. Let's get back to the curiosity line. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, there's been a few books written on the area called the Bermuda Triangle.
Oh, yes.
Where there's been quite a few mysterious disappearances of ships and aircraft. And I've been trying to find these books through the library, and nobody seems to have anything on it. Do you know of any books that are written on this area and this phenomena?
There is one called The Invisible Resident, written by a gentleman by the name of Ivan Sanderson, a very close friend of mine who passed away recently. I do not know who the publisher is. It is a book that concerns not only the Bermuda Triangle, but a number of other rather mysterious type of phenomena that have occurred in the world. And also, I understand that the Glenview Naval Air Station has a piece from their public affairs department, has a printed piece of material on that subject, and you can write to the public affairs department at Glenview, and they will be able to send you some material on that subject.
Okay, fine. Thank you very much.
Can you
stay on the
line, please?
We've got more.
Hello?
We've got more information for you.
This is a question that's come in to us at the Action Line any number of times. It really brings up a lot of curiosity, and there seems to be a hard time, people have a hard time getting hold of that book. That same question has come up several times. You just simply have to look around a little harder. The book is in print, and I know the publishers, the booksellers were saying that they were having a hard time keeping it in stock. Can we ask you about Ashtabula?
It sounds like something to be out of Alabama.
No. Alabama's wrong. So let's move on to another call. And thank you for calling. We hope that you'll be with us every Saturday morning.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you much.
Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah, what was it you wanted on Ashtabula?
Well, we want to know what state it's in.
It is in Ohio.
Well, you're right. Now, for the big question of the day, how do you spell it?
Okay.
That's okay is wrong. Okay, go ahead.
Oh. Ashtabula.
That is 100% correct.
Right.
You are absolutely right. What I'd like to do now, what is your name, sir?
Richard Kaplan.
Richard Kaplan. Richard, I'd like to put you on hold. Our producer, Marcia Goldberg, will get your address, and we are going to be sending you, courtesy of the Rand McNally folks, your choice of either the 1973 Mobile Regional Guide or the 1973 National Road Atlas. You tell our producer, Marcia, which...
Published by Rand McNally.
Right, published by Rand McNally. You tell her which one you'd like, and we'll be glad to send that out to you.
Oh, incidentally, for anybody else that wanted a little more information on the steam-powered elevated locomotives, okay, I would suggest they go to a book which our club has just recently published. Of course, incidentally, we're celebrating our 35th anniversary.
Which club is it, sir?
Oh, okay. The Central Electric Rail Fans Association has put out Chicago's Rapid Transit, Volume 1. This covers all rolling stock from 1892 to 1947. And there's quite a section with complete as information we've been able to gather on the rosters as of the numbering and the names of certain of these units, where they went so far as is practicable, and it covers all the equipment up to 47.
Where
the next
volume
will cover equipment up to the present day, and then the third volume will cover operations.
Where can they get it, sir?
Okay, they can get this at either All Nations Hobby Shop, we know has it in stock, which is on Madison Street between Wells and Franklin, or by mail from the Central Electric Rail Fans Association at Post Office Box 503, Chicago 60690. The price is $15 plus 5% tax.
$15 plus 5%.
Right, plus
okay.
5% tax. But they can examine this as well as any of the other recent bulletins our group has put out at All Nations Hobby Shop, for example.
Thanks very
much. Okay, thank you very much. We'll hope you'll be a regular listener.
Okay,
thank you.
I am.
Okay, stay on the line now. We're going to get your address. All right, that's just about it for our first show, Volume 1, Number 1 of I Am Curious Radio. Kenneth, thank you very much. We had a nice, I would say, relatively easy start so far. We didn't get too many stumpers, but hopefully next week, either by calling us at 475-1590 on a Saturday morning between 11:30 and 12:30, or by dropping us a line at WLTD, Evanston, 60202, we'll be able to help you out.
Well,
okay.
I had my curiosity satisfied. I now know how the first show went.
Okay.
I enjoyed it very much.
Thank you very much, Ken. And this is Bruce Dumont thanking our producer, Marcia Goldberg, and Carol Heiss for helping us out this morning, saying we'll see you next Saturday morning.
I Am Curious Radio is a Jenny B. production and came to you live from WLTD in Evanston. At the top of your dial, you're tuned to 1590 Radio WLTD. Along the lakefront, 50 degrees, O'Hare 55, and Midway officially 54 degrees, with a humidity 83%.
Hi there, very good afternoon to you. This is Bob Ellens inviting you once again to sit in with us as we recycle some of those wonderful old tunes of the big band era. We're a little late today at 12:30, as a matter of fact, and that'll be the case from now on because we're going to, as you just heard, have a weekly feature here on WLTD, a program of great interest. I am Curious Radio. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm sure you did, and we'll tune in again next week. And don't think we're going to neglect you with music of the big band era. Because as always, here on WLTD, there is music of a nostalgia kind, a lot of reminiscing, and every day, Monday through Friday, at around 4 o'clock, you hear the fine offerings of Mike Schwimmer and company in his Hall Closet. Not the Hall Closet. He has another name for his program, but the same sort of thing. Good reminiscing-type music, nostalgia, remembering, okay? Right now, we're going to remember music-wise with music, as we say, of the big band era. And when was that specifically? Well, the latter 1930s. The blending of jazz, the popular swing music influence, and music also something like this. Orrin Tucker and the orchestra.
Love me or leave me and let me be lonely. You won't believe me and I love you only. I'd rather be lonely than happy with somebody else. You might find the nighttime the right time for kissing, but nighttime is my time for just reminiscing, regretting instead of forgetting with somebody else. There'll be no one unless that someone is you. I intend to be independently blue. I want your love, but I don't want to...